Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speakers for this evening. First, Talia Honorato is a committed gerontologist with over 9 years' experience in senior living. Her master's degree in gerontology emphasized long-term care administration. Because of her deep interest in the subject, her thesis focused on Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and caregiver strategies. Equally important to Talia's accomplishments is her genuine compassion and dedication to those she serves. For her, enhancing the quality of life for older adults is not just a career, it's a vocation. Talia is currently a client care manager at Reliable Caregivers. Linda Leary has over 30 years' experience in elder care. After completing nursing school in 1978, she opened her first medical staffing agency. She successfully built the business for the next 10 years and sold her agency to a national home health care company. Shortly after, Linda went into clothing design business with her daughter, but realized that her true passion was in elder care. After 3 years, the non-compete agreement expired. She created Reliable Caregivers. Throughout her many successful endeavors, Linda has never lost touch with the spirit of community that first welcomed her to San Francisco and remains to this day. Pamela Sharkey started working in long-term care facilities in 1988 and has worked for both skilled nursing as well as assisted living facilities. She's worked her way up the ranks as a charge nurse, director of staff development, director of nursing, a position she currently holds at San Francisco Towers. She is a registered nurse and also has a Bachelor of Science in Health Sciences, a Master's in Health Administration, and works as a legal nurse consultant assisting attorneys who protect elders in elder abuse cases. She's an advocate for elders and not only loves caring for their needs, but also has learned volumes from their experiences. You'll hear from all three this evening, and we'll start with Talia. And Talia, will you take the mic and then hand off to Linda when you're done?
Sure.
Thank you very much and welcome.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you again for being here tonight. My name is Talia Honorato, and I am a gerontologist. Tonight, Linda, Pamela, and I are going to talk about choices, options, and preparations that are important in order to help maximize quality of life as you gracefully embark your later years. In my mother's culture, Brazilian and Guyanese, children are taught to call older adults who are close to the family, auntie, uncle, grandma, and grandma. So I grew up calling our neighbors across the street Uncle Roscoe and Auntie LaVon. Auntie's mother, Granny Maddie, was the first person that I watched live and die with Alzheimer's disease. I developed early on a special affection for those people who were such an important part of my extended life. I've been working in the field now for over 9 years as a gerontologist. Many of you may be familiar what a gerontologist is, but a gerontologist studies the process of aging, whereas geriatrics focuses more on the medical needs. Today, our focus is on aging, on facing aging openly and intelligently, and in looking at some of the options for care as people become less able to care for themselves. Most of us in our culture don't anticipate our aging. We deny it. We know it's coming and we feel it's happening, but we give less attention preparing for it than we do getting ready for a 2-week trip to Hawaii. How many of you have given serious thought to your own aging? How many of you have thought about the possibility that one day you may not be able to care for yourself? And if you cannot help yourself, who do you expect to care for you? Your family? Your friends? A facility? A private paid caregiver? Even if you've already thought of these questions, have you made the necessary preparations? Have you discussed your wishes with your loved ones and friends? Are they comfortable and supportive of your wishes? Do you have the appropriate paperwork in place? The common response to these questions in most of us is, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I've seen it time and time again where something happens and the person does not have his or her wishes known. I once had a client, an elderly gentleman, whose wishes were not to be hospitalized or resuscitated in the event that he stopped breathing. Although he shared his wishes with me verbally, he kept putting off the necessary paperwork. I was able to get him the help of a social worker who was going to prepare a living will. But unfortunately, before the documents were complete, the man suffered a major stroke, which ended him in the hospital. During his hospital stay, he became non-responsive and, against his wishes, was resuscitated. He had lost too much oxygen to his brain and, as a result, was put on a breathing machine. At that time, his adult children were called upon to make decisions on his behalf. As it happens too far often, the children were not prepared. He had not shared his wishes with his children, and instead, they were caught up in their emotional needs and fears. As a result, this gentleman remained on a breathing machine for several months until finally the family was willing to let him go. In a culture so focused on youth and being young, aging can seem like a curse. Instead of embracing the inevitable, our culture tries to hide aging by marketing items like anti-aging cream, Botox, facelifts, liposuction. Aging conjures up negative associations like getting wrinkles, being hunched over, losing our teeth, walking slowly and unsteadily, having our bones turn brittle and our skin turn dry, having to use a cane, a wheelchair, a walker, losing our sex drive, losing our hearing, our memory, getting Alzheimer's disease or dementia, and or developing chronic diseases such as heart and lung problems. Although many of these associations can and do occur as we age, our attitudes, knowledge, and ability to accept these changes greatly influence the way we live our lives in our latter years. I would briefly like to talk about two of the issues I brought up: memory loss related to dementia and chronic disease. Both are common concerns that many of us have as we face aging. Many people do experience some degree of memory loss as they age. However, age-related changes associated with memory loss are not the same as dementia. As we grow older, physiological changes do occur that may slow the process of how we process information and slow our responses to the change in the environment. You've heard the saying time and time again, where are my keys? Well, many of us lose our keys, but we remember that we lost them. We also later find our keys. People with dementia may misplace their keys, will forget that they misplaced their keys, and later wonder, where are my keys? The brain is capable of producing new cells at any age, so significant memory loss is not an inevitable part of aging. The statement, use it or lose it, is true. I once had a 100-year-old resident when I was running a facility, and every day she showed her pride in her ability to complete the puzzles the crossword puzzles in the San Francisco Chronicle. Often it was she who had to give the answers to the rest of the community, the 80 and 90-year-olds. Keeping your brain stimulated is key and pays off, as shown by her. A major difference between age-related memory loss and dementia is that normal memory loss does not affect your ability to function on a regular basis, whereas dementia affects your ability to work, your ability to have interest in your hobbies, your social life, your interactions with your family, and most of all, your ability to take care of yourself. To put this into perspective, only 12.5% of older adults today have Alzheimer's disease. Chronic diseases are largely determined by our genetic makeup and also by our lifestyle choices. Statistics reveal that over 80% of older adults have at least one chronic disease, and over 50% report of having three chronic diseases. Here's a breakdown of many chronic diseases that older adults face. 40% have arthritis, 30% suffer from hypertension, 32% suffer from hearing impairments, 30% of older adults have heart disease, 17% have cataracts, and 17% have orthopedic impairments. What is important here is to be wise about your habits and lifestyle. Even if you can't control your genetics, you have control of how you choose to live. Make healthy choices sooner than later. Start now. Be open with your physicians regarding your health so he or she can address these conditions early on. The good news is that older people today are not just getting older. They're generally better off, healthier, and wealthier than ever before. In 2011, there were over 40.4 million people 65 and older, representing over 13.1% of the U.S. population. The older population is only growing. As you know, the baby boomer generation numbers over 77.6 million. Modern medicine today has extended our lifespan and now is rewriting the old rules of aging. Some of the changes, both physical and mental, normally associated with aging may not be normal at all, but rather results of unrelated, untreated health problems and a lifetime of poor habits. Although hereditary and genetic influences partially affect how we age, our life choices play far more significant role in slowing down the aging process. These choices include getting regular exercise, getting plenty of sleep, managing your stress, eating a balanced diet, maintaining your weight, being involved socially, drinking moderately or not at all, and not smoking. It is important to take these steps to create your healthy habits now. Experts agree that only 30% of physical aging can be attributed to our genetic background. The rest of it is up to us. In short, 70% of how we age is in our hands, and it's in our minds. Our attitudes toward aging are very important on how well we cope with and enjoy the passing years. Having our eyes open to the possibilities of the unknown and being informed are critical. The fact that each of you is here tonight is a good step in the right direction. We can adapt to health changes that come with aging with less difficulty if we plan for them. Planning makes the future less stressful and more enjoyable for both you and your loved ones. The onset of a health emergency such as a stroke, a heart attack, a terminal illness, or a major injury is not the time to make life and key decisions. Healthy aging should include steps now to ensure that certain matters are taken care of ahead of time. Take care of your finances. Saving for retirement is important. having enough money to enjoy and pay for care should circumstances arise is critical. Make sure your money is protected and you can get to it when needed. Also, by all means, don't put off making a living will or trust that spells out your final wishes regarding your finances. Prepare advance health care and financial directives designating a durable power of attorney to someone you trust should you become unable to make crucial decisions yourself. Be sure to indicate your wishes regarding whether or not you want to be resuscitated by filling out a pulse form or a DNR form. Completing these forms and stating your end-of-life wishes can save you and your family a great deal of stress. It's important to make decisions early rather than putting it off. Pick up the handouts, if you haven't already, on the tables of the documents that you should complete and websites where you can download them. It's important to have health insurance, including, if you can afford it, a supplemental plan that costs not met by Medicare. Be sure to have enough money to cover what your plan does not. Relying solely on Social Security is not in your best interest. Learn now to manage your stress. Stress in later years can affect not only your health, but also your quality of life. Start walking, play more golf, try yoga, tai chi, ballroom dancing. Write, or just spend more time in your garden. The sooner you start to learn to reduce your stress, the happier and healthier your future will be. Finally, it is essential to communicate one's choices and discuss with your loved ones the options you prefer should circumstances arise in which you can no longer adequately care for yourself. Communicating your wishes in written documents in open conversation is one of the greatest gifts you can share with your loved ones. Healthy aging starts with taking steps to improve your lifestyle, changing behaviors that are unhealthy, and being prepared for many possibilities that aging may present. Knowing your wishes and your options, as well as being open to your changing circumstances, will make your later years be more full of joy. My colleagues Linda Leary and Pamela Sharkey have expertise in options as we age and will now share their knowledge with you. Thank you.
Hi there. I'm Linda Leary, and I own Reliable Caregivers. I started my career as a certified nurse's aide working nights while I was going to nursing school. I had three little children, and I needed to support them while I was in school. I actually started working for Hospice of Marin, doing nights as a home health aide. I found my home in home care. As we age, we want to do it gracefully, with dignity. We want independence and quality of life. Do you want to remain in your home? That's a question that you have to ask yourself. Do you want to live there forever? That's aging in place at home. What services do you think you'll need to remain and able to stay in your home? What are the benefits? What are the downsides, the pros and cons of living independently and remaining in your home? Those are questions that I'm going to try to answer for you tonight. The challenges and the areas of concern are as follows. Are you going to be homebound once you are not able to drive any longer? What kind of transportation issues will, present themselves? The home modifications. Do you have a lot of stairs, as you may have in a lot of San Francisco homes? What about safety and security? Yard maintenance, and repairs in the home. Who will provide your food? Who will help you with shopping? There are issues of being at home that are surrounding isolation. Would you want to go to a senior center? Personal hygiene, mobility impairment? Will you be able to, you know, get up those stairs? Will you need a ramp? Will you need, you know, an elevator or a stair chair? Negotiating medical visits, you know, who will accompany you to the doctor's appointments, to dentists? You know, who's going to assist you in paying bills? You know, the financial part of that. Housekeeping, laundry. There are the costs of in-home care, which I'm going to discuss further. The medication administration. Those are all questions. I had one of my favorite patients call me to her home at one point, and I said to her, all your life you save for a rainy day. I said, it is pouring out. And she said to me, I know, my dear, but I have to check and see what size umbrella I can buy. The pros of remaining in your home are absolutely retaining your normal life, having your meaningful memories around you, your emotional bond to your home, a sense of community, the having lived for many, many years in the same neighborhood, knowing your local grocery store, your cleaners, the people that you meet each and every day, the knowledge of the geography, the proximity to those familiar surroundings, the ability to engage in particular areas of interest, enjoyable activities, your dietary preferences. I'm Italian. My dad ended his life in an assisted living. He wanted pasta. He didn't want that regular, you know, bland American food. We had to bring him pasta all the time. The, you know, maintaining those vibrant relationships, life as you know it, the ability to have the privacy of your own home, the mental stimulation, the neighbors that look out for each other, the ability to bond with your caregiver. Caregivers notice the tiniest detail. They notice, you know, she's just listing a little bit to the right today. She's not, you know, as attentive as she's always been. The ability to know that person. Another of my patients actually noticed, I used to work Monday through Friday. I did the night shift. And I took time off on the weekends to be with my children. When I would return on Monday morning, she would look at me and she'd say, I don't like it when you don't come home at night. She thought I lived at her house and that I was her daughter. The ability to bond with that caregiver is very, very important. I know for me, my husband and I have a home in Spain. We travel the world together. And when Tomas and I talk about aging, I want my reliable caregiver with me all the time. I want her to know all those details. I want her to go everywhere with me. Some of the resources that are available to you so you can remain in your home. We have a list of services and, you know, questions that might be helpful to you. There's also an AARP booklet that we're leaving for you. There are the pendant alert bracelets. You've all heard, I've fallen and I can't get up. They are really, really helpful. It will allow you to remain independent for a much longer time. The home modifications. There are hand bars, ramps, step-in showers, shower chairs, chair lifts. Those are the things, the adaptive equipment that will allow you to remain home. Durable medical equipment, walkers, wheelchairs, portable, you know, commodes. The idea of having a support group is a really good thing. If you have friends and family, the village model is a really good way to go. It allows you to have the access of services of an already vetted agency, carpenters, people that would come into your home that have already had background checks, that kind of thing. There are senior centers. There are transportation services out there. There are outreach programs. Spirituality, your church, your temple. There are hospice programs, advanced illness management, the AIM program. So if you have need for care other than the end-of-life care, you can actually access that. Long-term care insurance is another thing that if you did want to remain in your home, that might be a good way to extend your financial ability to remain home. The choices in hiring a home health agency are really varied, and the kind of service that I offer is a full-service agency. Talia, as she so succinctly said, is one of our care managers. Our care managers come out, they meet with you, they assess whether you will need certain things in your home, and then they oversee that care. They actually keep a care log in the home, and they're constantly checking back with your physician, with your family members, with your adult children. We screen all caregivers. We do background checks. We also, you know, pay all the taxes, insurance, workers' comp, and we supervise and monitor those caregivers. A referral agency is another way to go. But if you use a referral agency, they will place the caregiver for a placement fee. You will need to take care of that workers' comp yourself and that, taxes and those kinds of things. The other way to go is a private hire. And a private hire is a less expensive way to go, but the responsibility does fall on you to vet that that caregiver. The idea of our agency or others like it is that they will schedule the shifts for you if someone calls on out sick. There are many, many ways and many options to remain in your own home. I believe in home care. I feel that it's a dignified way to go. There are many, many other options, and I'd like to introduce my distinguished colleague, Pam Shockey, to give a really good comprehensive review of facilities.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me okay? I graduated from nursing school in 1967 as a registered nurse, and I went to work in the hospital. Then I took a break, had kids, found myself to be a single parent, moved back to California, and wanted to get a job as a nurse again so that I could put food on the table, obviously. What happened was is the acute care hospitals were going through a lot of hiring difficulties, so I did a couple of little classes there, but there was Fresno Community Hospital in Fresno, California, has 5 long-term care facilities. And one was a dementia, 99-bed dementia long-term care facility. And it was like a mile from my house and the kids' school, and it was perfect. And so for my convenience, I decided to get a job there as a nurse. And I fell in love with long-term care ever since. I've not left. I love the elderly. They are just wonderful. They're resources for so much information, as well as they really are fun to take care of. Now, as far as the long-term care facilities goes, that's kind of more medical model. What I want to give you is a couple other facilities and the ways that and levels that are available to people. The first one, and I did work in this at Rhoda Goldman Plaza. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but that is a strict residential care facility for the elderly. Now, that's a 196-bed facility. It's very beautiful. It's very nice. But with assisted living, or RCFE, you basically just need assistance. You don't, it's more licensed by the Department of Social Services. You don't really need a lot of medical care. What they call it is a social model that you can get some medical care, like if you need help with your dressing, with your bathing, with your medication administration. So that is the assisted living level of care. Normally, that's private pay. Insurance normally doesn't cover that. I know when I was at Rhoda Goldman Plaza, you would pay a monthly maintenance fee. And if you need so many minutes of care a day, you'd pay another level on top of that. And then so many more minutes, you'd pay another level. And if you got up to where you needed more than 2 hours of care or help in a 24-hour period, they were kind of looking at skilled nursing, and maybe you needed too much assistance to be that level of care. Now, at Rhoda Goldman Plaza, if you had level of care, that was tax deductible as medical care. The monthly fee was not tax deductible. So another RCFE that's very common in the San Francisco area is what they call six-bed. People will turn their houses into RCFEs, and they only have six people or six bedrooms, and that's the same regulations, the same level of care as Rhoda Goldman Plaza. Now, the next higher level of care is where, of course, I'm working now, in skilled nursing. Skilled nursing facilities are licensed by the state of California through the Department of Health. So we do have a little bit of social, but mainly it's medical. It's for the person that has a medical issue, maybe a broken hip, goes in the hospital, and then needs rehab on the way out before they can, as a bridge to go home. Now, skilled nursing facilities are covered by Medicare, but a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about Medicare. First of all, if Mrs. Smith falls in her home and breaks her hip, then she goes to, let's say, CPMC, California Pacific Medical Center. In order for her to be able to go to a skilled nursing facility and to have Medicare cover it, Mrs. Smith has to spend at least 3 midnights in the hospital. Not 3 days, 3 midnights. They say the head has to be on the pillow for 3 midnights. That's what the little quote is. If she has 3 midnights in the hospital and she has a skilled need, now, the skilled need would be for Mrs. Smith. She's going to have some rehab in order to get her back up on her feet. If she has that skilled need, then she can come and Medicare will pay for in a skilled nursing facility. Now, what happens is Medicare will say, all right, Mrs. Smith, I'll give you 20 days of 100%. But after 20 days, if you still need a skilled nursing, then I'm only going to pay 80%. And you're going to be responsible for 20%. That 20% is where your secondary insurance kicks in. So any of you that do have AARP or you have Aetna, this is where this part comes in handy. And the secondary insurance varies year to year, not a lot. Sometimes it's $120. I think it's $151 a day for that secondary stay, if Mrs. Smith is going to stay in my facility. Now, if Mrs. Smith is going like this and getting better every day, getting better every day, getting better, Medicare says good. But all of a sudden Mrs. Smith has gone as far as she's going to go with therapy, Medicare says we're not going to pay anymore. You're going to have to go home, or you're going to have to pay privately if you don't have anybody to take care of you at home. This is where we work hand-in-hand with Linda's company and other companies like her. We don't like to just use one company. We like to give people an option. But this is where the bridge now, you've got a bridge from the hospital to home by staying in a skilled nursing facility, and then you're strong enough to go home but not strong enough to be by yourself yet. So those are the levels of care that are available to people who can't take care of themselves at home, that have to have medical care, and the levels that provide them with either nursing care or provide them with just that little bit of assistance that they need but they can't afford. It is less expensive than having somebody care for you at home, the monthly fee. So that is, now of course, skilled nursing is more expensive than having somebody take care of you at home because you have more skilled professionals. All right, now the advantages and the disadvantages of a skilled nursing facility, or for instance, let's talk about San Francisco Towers. San Francisco Towers is both an RCFE and a skilled nursing facility. And there are many CCRCs, this community for retirement community. There's Coventry Park. Coventry Park, I think, is just an assisted living. But the Sequoias, anywhere that you can get someplace that's going to take care of you for the rest of your life. For instance, the San Francisco Towers, we have a few hundred, I think we've got 297 independent apartments. So people move in there independently. And then we've got a small assisted living area that's 12 apartments. And then we have a 55-bed skilled nursing unit that I run. So as you can see, people can be taken care of independently, assisted living, and skilled nursing. Now, at San Francisco Towers, all of the independent apartments are licensed as RCFE or assisted living. So if Mrs. Smith went back to San Francisco Towers and needed some assistance in her independent apartment, that's legal. It's okay. We've got staff there to do that. So if Mrs. Smith needs to stay in the skilled nursing, then she would have to forfeit her apartment if she lived at the San Francisco Towers. So it's a continuum. The beauty is that when I worked at Rhoda Goldman Plaza, what happened was is if you had Mr. and Mrs. Smith living there and Mrs. Smith broke her hip, she'd have to potentially go to a nursing home, and Mr. Smith would be at the San Francisco, or at Rhoda Goldman Plaza. So you had two levels of care for husband and wife. The beauty of the CCRC that I love, because it broke my heart to separate the husband and the wife, that the wife had to go to a nursing home and the husband had to take a shuttle every day to go see her. The beauty of a CCRC is that Mr. and Mrs. Smith have their independent apartment. Mrs. Smith needs to be down in my unit because she's now just has become so weak from her broken hip. And Mr. Smith can come within the building and go down and see her whenever he wants to. And that, to me, as a nurse, is so much more heartwarming than to have to send somebody out of a building. So that's the beauty of a CCRC. So we have the advantages and the disadvantages of home health and then CCRC, skilled nursing, and the RCFE. Now, of course, everybody, like Linda said, wants to stay in their home. And so the disadvantage, of course, is a lot of people move into a community. They lose their identity. They feel like they have to share everything. They have to share the living room, the dining room, everything. Nothing is their own. But, again, the advantage is the socialization. So many people move into both Rhoda Goldman Plaza and to the San Francisco Towers because they've lost all their friends. And they don't have anybody to go to dinner with. They don't have anybody to go play cards with. So the advantage of living in a community is you can pick some friends and play cards. And well, I know at San Francisco Towers, the activities are going constantly. So the advantages and disadvantages, it just have to be weighed on an individual basis. It's not something that is a cookie cutter for each and every person. So that's the community living from my perspective of the two different levels or the three different levels. And I'm sure John's going to see if anybody has any questions for any of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'd like to remind our listening audience this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Talia Honorato, Linda Leary, Pamela Sharkey on Aging Elegantly.
Did we
we say that?
I know there are questions, so you have one, if you'd raise your hand, and we'll bring you the mic so that you can be heard on the tape, right?
I have read that the best way to keep your brain healthy is physical exercise. Would you agree with that? Better than crossword puzzles?
I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination. But physical exercise is one of the top.
It's the number one in terms of statistics at this time. So I think a combination of physical and keeping your brain stimulated, whether it be through something physical or something like the crossword puzzle, Sudoku, or whatnot.
Okay. Because I had a doctor, I had an MRI of my brain one time, and I went to the neurologist, and she said, well, you know, I said, how is it? She says, well, you don't have a brain tumor, just the regular aging things. I said to her, what do you mean, the regular aging things? And she says, you know how when you get older, your little capillary starts shutting down? Okay, that has to do with physical exercise then, doesn't it? Don't you think?
The capillaries are going to shut down regardless.
Are they? Well, that's disappointing.
But you can keep them going, keep your functions going.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your very informative information. I really appreciate it. On the three levels of care, can you give us a general idea of what is the cost for CCRC, RCFE, and NF?
You know, it varies from community to community. I can tell you that in a skilled nursing facility, and we're pretty competitive, it's about $395 a day if you're paying privately. Now, that is 24-hour licensed nursing care, room and board. It doesn't include medications or physical therapy. Now, as far as RCFE and CCRC, they've all run differently, and I don't really have a quote on that.
The RCFE that I used to work for just to get in was about $4,095, and then that is not including care. So you're looking at anywhere from $200 to an additional $900 a month, depending on the level of care needed.
And I can address the CCRC part because I work at the Sequoias. That's like you were speaking about. So mm-hmm. From the residential side, they have a one-time entrance fee and then monthly care fees. And this is true at the Towers and also at the Heritage. Any CCRC will have that basic structure. If you want a figure, I could tell you that I only know our figures, so forgive me. I can't quote the Towers, but our studios start at around $117,000 on the entry fee and about $3,400 a month, and that includes the apartment and rent and the medical care, et cetera. So I hope that rounds it out.
Yeah.
If you live alone in your home, what do you think of Life Alert?
Life Alert is a very, very good way to go to actually have either a pendant or, you know, it's that same thing, I've fallen and I can't get up. What you do is you have to give a name and a number for that person to be contacted, your emergency person. And then the, 911 would be alerted and they would call, you know, they would, you know, speak out to you. Are you all right, Mrs. Johnson? So it's a very good way to go, and it really does allow you to have independence for a much longer time.
What does, is it RCFE or whatever the letters are? What does that stand for?
Residential
please?
Care Facility for the Elderly. And so mostly that's assisted living facilities often fall under the license of RCFE.
Thanks. When you were talking about $117,000 entry fee, what happens if you died the second month you were in there? Is that part of your estate, or do you lose the $117,000?
Well, we're getting into technical areas because I know that both at the Towers and at the Sequoias they have different contract types. So it depends on the contract that you've signed. Now, traditionally in life care, I think in the first year, if you pass away, you're a single person, your estate would get up to 75% of it returned. But if you have a repayment contract, depending on the terms of the contract, you may get more back. So it's just dependent on the community.
Just a quick question. Do you have any connection to the whole end-of-life choices movement, compassion, end-of-life options in your work?
The only one that we really work with is either some type of palliative care with the doctor, and that's without hospice, so it's comfort care but not really end-of-life care. And then we use Hospice by the Bay for end-of-life care for hospice.
And in the home care setting, we work very closely with several hospice agencies. So there are several that are allocated to different family members based on doctor referrals and client needs. And so our caregivers, we train them and have them work closely with the hospice nurses so that the client in the home is getting their needs met and can die at home.
As someone who's not a full senior yet, it's kind of scary how expensive the retirement stuff is. It's kind of frightening. And I know my friends haven't thought about saving money for these extremely expensive issues. Is there any creative way of, like, you know, mixed age housing or anything you see on the horizon that might, it's a different model that would work for the baby boomers?
The San Francisco Village model is definitely, on the horizon for people to remain in their home and actually have services that would bind that community. It is definitely, a thought process that you have to go through, as you get older and prepare. But it's not cheap to get old. It really isn't.
My mom is 88 and showing some signs of memory loss, and I've done some research and have seen on the internet the miracles of coconut oil and ketones. Do any of you have any comments about the effectiveness of this for in dealing with memory loss issues?
Is she taking it right now?
I'm trying to get her to do it. It's like me when I was a kid with my peas. That's kind of payback line.
I think time will tell. There are a lot of home remedies or more holistic remedies that are coming back from Western medicine, and we just don't know the effectiveness because we need that time to tell.
One of the things that those of us, I've heard about resveratrol, and I don't know if you all know, but it is one of the key ingredients in wine. And so you have your choice of drinking a lot of wine, but then you'll really be forgetful. So, but there are many, many, things. Obviously, the exercise and taking care of yourself physically, those are the things that are going to allow us to remain. And the baby boomers are going to change the voice of aging. I really think that we've all, throughout our lives, have gone through, really changing the way we think. I think we're going to change aging and death.
This is the other side of the coin. I have an acquaintance who's living up in Murphy's, has no money, zip, Social Security supplemental. Has a woman come in 2 hours a morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, 6 days a week. Has PT people coming, working every day. So, How does that work?
Good.
Good for her.
Good. I mean, you can piecemeal things together. It doesn't have to be all and every. I mean, if a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours in the afternoon, a physical therapy during the day maintains a quality of life and functioning.
But he's not paying it.
Because it's Social Security?
He has in-home, he probably has in-home supportive services. And in-home supportive services are there for people that are low income or Social Security. The kinds of services that we offer, you can have someone a few days a week, and if that will be enough to get to get by so that you will have the option to stay in your home. You could even have someone come in the morning. I call it the fluff and buff visit. So someone could come in, get you ready for the day, and get going, which is what your friend is having, and then in the evening have that tuck-in service. So there are many ways to give you that stopgap measure so that you can remain in your home, so that you can. The optimal way is what Pam mentioned, San Francisco Towers and the Sequoias. The fact that you can have your own apartment, remain independent, and then have a step down to those units, assisted living and skilled nursing facility. But that also is an enormous expense. If you have your home and you've paid, for that home, there are many, many options. Everything is so individualized, and that you have to make that decision for yourself. But now is the time to start thinking about that, not when it's so late.
Oh, I was just wondering, since we have some sense of the facility costs, if someone tried to stay in their own home and used your service, what would be the range from a few hours a day to up to 24-hour care? I would assume at some point in your home, if you needed 24-hour care, would be more expensive than in a facility, but I don't know.
Well, it's actually $295 a day, so it's very comparable to the facilities for a live-in. That's someone to live with you 24 hours a day and to remain with you all of the time. The way we work is we usually have someone 5 days a week and then 2 days off. Or you could have someone 3 days a week and then another person 4 days. The beauty of having a home health agency like mine is you will have the option to call me and say, I really like Susan. It's Mary, not so good. And, you can have that person change. The idea of being, able to make those choices, a private hire, you can also, decide whether that particular person is the right person for you. And as I said, there are many, many options. We did prepare a glossary for you. So all of these, all this terminology that sounds so foreign is absolutely, being able to spell it out for you.
All right. Thank you so much. We want to thank our speakers tonight, Talia Honorado, Linda Leary, Pamela Sharkey, and our listening audience. Now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 109th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. Thank you.
I do want to say one more thing.
If you have questions, will you answer questions individually?
Yes.
If people have questions, you can still come
I
up.
Did want to tell you that we don't mind if you call us. If you call Reliable and ask questions that have absolutely nothing to do with home care, we don't mind being part of the continuum. If you have a question that we haven't been able to answer tonight, do not hesitate to call us.
Sure.
I would like to reconnect.
My card's out there on the table.
Sorry.
Yes.
I would very much like to reconnect.
Okay, excellent.
Pardon me?
All right. Well, thank you. Okay, great.
Pam Sharkey.
I've been very involved in getting her into the Safe Harbor, which is exactly the same thing.
Well, they're part of our company.
Health insurance.
Yes.
And
I bought long-term care insurance because I see it every day. Long-term care insurance does allow you to have like $300 a day for your care. You know, what are the things that maybe you could ask him about? Long-term care, you want to stay at home, then you need long-term care.
I go with a very reputable long-term care insurance agency.
I went with John Hancock. You know, one that's really well known is Genworth. Genworth is very, very good. I think Prudential has one. MetLife has one.
When Denby. His collected writings, I think, give you a lot of insight into balancing. The other thing that I would recommend is a book by Suki Shorer called Balancing Technique. She's very clear about what Balanchine wanted. The other thing that I would recommend, and I love doing this, is that Balanchine wrote a number of articles. Now, it's true that they were edited and put into good English by people like Francis Mason and Lincoln Kirstein. But I do know that a lot of the articles, actually, they say what he wants. They weren't making it up, especially when he talks about movement. Okay. Now, the other thing is that actually the two Balanchine biographies that are around are really good reads, and they'll give you the basic outline. The thicker, bigger one is Bernard Taper's book called Balanchine's Choreo. I think it's just called Balanchine. And then Bob Gottlieb, who is not only the former editor of The New Yorker, but also hung around City Ballet a lot during the Balanchine years and was a member of the board. He's written a shorter, very readable version that does tell you the basic things about Balanchine's life. What I'm hoping for eventually is people beginning to really talk about the movement. And that's where Suki Shorer's book on Balanchine Technique is terrific. Hope that helps.
One final question.
Short people. Just in consideration of why you're here this week, mm-hmm. maybe if you could answer the question, what characteristics does San Francisco Ballet have as a company, or must it have as a company, that make it so qualified to perform Balanchine's work?
Well, definitely it's the heritage. I mean, Ballet is kind of like an oral history. The history of ballet is something that's passed on from master to pupil. And as I say, there are two people. First of all, Lou Christensen and the Christensen brothers. You know, Balanchine mounted Apollo in America on Lou Christensen. And Christensen danced with him, danced in all those early ballets, had class with him. So what Lou Christensen passed on to his teachers are being passed on in turn to the dancers of San Francisco Ballet. The other thing is that the current director of San Francisco Ballet, Helgi Thomason, is another Balanchine dancer who danced in City Ballet for many years, who took the Balanchine classes, who understands the style, and can give it to his students. It's not secondhand. You're getting a direct through line from Balanchine to Lou Christensen, to Helgi Thomason, to the San Francisco dancers.
Well, thank you so much, Beth. I'd like to thank Beth Janae for her illuminating remarks today, and to San Francisco Ballet for co-sponsoring the program, our beautiful company dancing the beautiful choreography and fulfilling the legacy of Balanchine. Thanks to our audience today, all of you, and our radio audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating its 108th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.